and welcome to the Field Notes podcast from Arosha. I'm Jo Swinney, and I'm Director of Communications for Arosha International.
And I'm Rick Faw, and I've been with Arosha for 20 years as part of the Arosha Canada team.
Now, we all know that the rapid thinning of life on Earth and the climate crisis can often feel overwhelming.
So it's our hope that in this podcast, you will hear some remarkable and original perspectives from people we know who are working to care for creation around the world.
There are lots of people who come to our farm that have very little experience with growing food, and they have these really beautiful moments of seeing it and experience it and are quite transformed.
I think it is just astonishing how there's lots of studies about this, but just having your hands in the soil and caring for the land and connecting to the land is healing.
Well, hello, everyone. Welcome to the Field Notes podcast. In this episode, I think it's fair to say we have a treat for you, though the treat would be better. This is an example of a podcast where it would be much better in person because our guests today, they grow food. And so I'm sure if we got to actually taste some of the fruits of their labor, oh man, that would bring a whole new level to the Field Notes podcast. But in any case, I think you're going to have a real treat getting to hear from Abby Simonen and Carly Richardson. Abby is the Agricultural Program Coordinator for Arosha Canada, based in BC. And Carly is the CSA, or Community Shared Agriculture, the CSA Farm Coordinator at Arosha's project in BC. So they work together. And they're colleagues of mine, so I'm a bit biased. I think they're great. But Joe, what struck you about the conversation that we got to enjoy with them today?
Oh, I'd agree with you that they are absolutely great. And I've never considered a job change into the farming arena, but they made me want to go and join that team. It sounds like an amazing community, an amazing vision that they have and way that they go about growing food. Just quite, I kept thinking, gosh, this is so wholesome. That was the word. Like it's healthy. It's physically, spiritually, emotionally, socially healthy, what they're doing. And it felt as they were talking like, oh, something in me was just going, this is how it should be. This is how food should be grown in company with good people, with such an eye on the abundance of a harvest and how that can be shared. I mean, they give away a phenomenal amount of their produce, and the amount of attention that they give and joy that they get over tomatoes and pollinators and the people who come. I found it a really beautiful picture that they were painting, and I'm sure also an amazingly huge amount of work, and they didn't pretend it wasn't, but still made farming sound like a really genuinely good life choice. Never thought I'd say that.
Yeah, I agree. I think it can be quite a remarkable life choice. And they're generous enough to, I'll tell you one little story. They've started an annual weeding contest where they invite all of us office types to join them. And we each get our row of onions, and it's a race. Who can weed the row the fastest? And of course, the farmers always win, but still it's fun. And it's an example of their playfulness, but also their invitational kind of posture, inviting people in. One of the things that really struck me about it is I thought, like, especially farming where they are in this northern hemisphere, farming is ruled by rhythms, seasonal rhythms. And you can't fight them. August is always full on and busy and too much. And, you know, December is pretty quiet. But one of the things that they emphasized is not just the constraint of those rhythms, but the gift of them. And there's something about that strikes me as not only apropos for farming, but also for many other aspects of life. Sometimes what feels like a constraint can actually be a gift if we're able to recognize it as such. So that's one of the things that struck me.
Yeah, I think they're just really good companies. So I'm sure that as you listen, everyone, you're going to meet some new friends too, and maybe want to go and plant some stuff or in your yard. So without further ado, we'll hand you over.
Welcome, everyone. We're here again for the next episode of the Field Notes podcast. And today we're delighted to have Carly and Abby with us today. So good to have you guys. I'm particularly glad to have you here because I get to work with you. This is usually, often I'm interviewing people that I've never met, but I know both of you fairly well. And it's a delight to introduce you to so many other people.
Thanks. An honor. Yeah, good to be here.
So a question we like to kick off with every interview is, what is something about the created world that fills you with wonder? So this could be a place, it could be a creature, it could be, you guys are both gardeners, so it could be a plant, it could be, I don't know, something. What's something that kind of has elicited this kind of excitement or awe or wonder in you?
I'd say for me, I grew up in California and I'd have to say the ocean. I think, I grew up spending so much time in the water, and as I've gotten older, it's like the place I go for kind of everything, to cry, to play, to celebrate. I feel God's presence a lot also in the ocean sometimes, and maybe it's just how massive it is and vast and varied. I mean, even just the ocean up here in BC is quite different than the like powerful waves of California and the warm waves of Southern California and the cold of Northern. So I think there's so much about it that just draws me and compels me. And I feel kind of like the world around me, or my little world, sort of disappears when I'm in the ocean.
I guess for me, it's not so much like a certain place or ecosystem, but moments when I can be present enough to truly watch and observe. And something that comes to mind that I still like can remember like being shocked or just stunned by what I saw was when I was like idling in my garden a few years ago in New York State before we moved out here, during the monarch butterfly migration, just watching the butterflies come through my garden and landing on the red zinnias. And around then, a hummingbird came in too to see the zinnias, the flowers. And that I saw a butterfly make a proper beeline after a hummingbird. And I was like, whoa, what? And this butterfly was chasing the hummingbird off, like really directly. Like, and the hummingbird eventually like took off. And well, at one point it was like hiding behind another flower where you couldn't see, the butterfly couldn't find him. And I was like, wait, hang on. Like, since when do these like floaty butterflies who barely seem like they can go in the direction they want to go, like be that intentional in their movements? So that's how I found out that was a thing. Just when I had a chance to really observe. So I think there's other stories like that, that I just, if I have enough presence and time to sit and really watch, there's so much wonder around.
I happened to be reading Romans 1 this morning, and it says that everything, all the invisible qualities of God can be known from what has been made. And yeah, it's so true. There's so much to know about just watching the details of things going on around us. And it connects us to the Creator so directly. Yeah, moving on to the heart of our discussion. As a bit of a foodie, one of the things I love about Rosh Canada's work is that you grow food, eat it, serve it, send it around the place. It's such a foodie place. And I know that both of you, your work is around the agricultural program. So could you tell us a bit about what goes on?
Yeah, maybe I'll share a bit about like the growing aspect of what we're doing. So the farm's been in operation for, I think, 20 years now, and started small, but now we're growing on about 2.5 acres. We grow over 200 varieties of vegetables and flowers. And vegetables are definitely our focus, but Abby and I both love flowers a lot, so we couldn't let that slide. So we do a small flower CSA and then sell flowers at the market and our farm stand and just have them because they're beautiful and important to the ecosystem as well. And growing them sustainably is quite important.
Carly, can I just ask you to explain what a CSA is for the ignorant among us like me?
Oh, yeah, of course. So CSA stands for Community Supported Agriculture. And it's a concept that's been around for a long time. It was started by a Black farmer in the U.S., actually, I believe. And maybe Abby can remember his name. I'm forgetting. But it's all about focusing on supporting the farmer when the costs are the highest and giving a commitment through the whole season. So members sign up at the beginning of the year and they pay a portion of the farm's cost. So for a full season subscription worth of vegetables, and then all year they get to eat out of whatever the farm grows. And so they experience the highs and lows of the farms. And the CSA models have evolved quite a lot over the years. And now you can sign up for CSAs that are basically like grocery shopping online and you get exactly what you want. But you can also find CSAs where you don't really, like you just have no idea what's coming. And our CSA is somewhere in the middle of that.
Yeah. So we have grants and then we have individual donors that cover our growing costs. And then we can give away a lot of produce each year. I think last year we gave away over $25,000 worth of produce, which is very gratifying and a really special part for Carly and I as farmers to work on a farm that's production and also the sort of generosity and trying to make that happen every year and working hard to make that happen. And then about 15% of our sales are, I think Carly mentioned, farmer's market. We have the farm stand. We do sell to some restaurants. We have a plant seedling sale. There's sometimes farm workshops. And then we do some value added things too. It's the typical like small farm hustle of diversifying our income in some way. And a little picture of our team, because I think that's helpful for scale a little bit. There's two full-time farmers, Carly and Leah, the assistant farmer. And then I'm part-time as the sort of farm administration and communication and marketing and education, wearing all the other office hats. And our seasonal crew this year is two apprentices who are here for 5 months, some short-term seasonal workers who are here for 2 months at a time. There's four of them this year. Couple sort of short-term residents, and there's a whole residency program at Arasha that's has people coming to learn about sort of Christian ethics, community, and they get a chance to work either on the farm or the science team or the education team while they're here. So we have a couple of those on the farm while they're here, and then volunteers that come through are also a valuable part of our team and something that we really love about the farm here is having open space for people who are coming once and or people who are coming every week as volunteers to help.
Well, that's a great overview. Okay, so, the little bit that I know about growing food, doing agriculture, is it's very seasonal. In fact, that's one of the things that I think I've been most challenged to lean into is the seasonality of food in a culture where what I can get strawberries at any time of the year kind of thing. So there's rhythms of planning and planting, weeding, watering, harvesting, preserving, like all these different things take place during any cycle. Fallow times, there's really intense times. I'm curious, in the midst of all that, what's one aspect that you particularly enjoy and what's one aspect that you find particularly challenging? How about Abby, you go first on this one.
Yeah, I find the whole cycle of growing food to be like really joyful and amazing to experience and observe. And the spring right now is, you know, an easy target because it's all kinds of wonderful, sort of this reawakening and resurrection that's everywhere. And all like the seeds that were held in darkness are now like sprouting into life. And the compost we transformed in the fall is cured in the winter and is ready to bring life again to this crop. And the springtime is really sort of the reawakening. So I think that's really beautiful. I think a challenging aspect is, of course, like you talk to any farmer in August, especially like a vegetable farmer, and you ask like, oh, how are you holding up? And they'll say like, well, it's August, which means it's really intense and it's full force and we're not sleeping much. We don't have time to cook our own meals, but it's also beautiful and abundant and awe-inspiring, but it's all too much.
Polly, how do you find it being out in all weathers? Do you have a favorite kind of weather for farming in?
I think I like summer. It's hard to like, yeah, to say anything else. I mean, I agree with Abby that there's like, I mean, what drew me into agriculture was that like rhythm. You're forced into rhythm. And I think that's definitely contrasting to the world we live in where you can be going 100% all year round. But in farming, you can't. But I think the summer for sure. And I grew up playing sports and I was a college athlete and I would say I'm a fairly intense person. So the, like, I think my favorite thing about the season in agriculture is like that peak summer when you're just like at your end and you're pushing really hard, but you're just like surrounded by the bounty of everything, and it's sunny and your skin is feeling dried out by the sun and drenched in sweat, but you're just also like biting into the juiciest tomatoes you've ever seen and picking the most beautiful flowers and hopefully eating what you're growing. I would say that like the challenge I experience is kind of also is repeating Abby a bit, but just finding myself as someone drawn to farming, having a bit of a chefing background too, eating pasta for dinner a lot of nights because I just like am so exhausted. I don't have time to kind of fully enjoy all the things that we're growing. It's just, it's a lot of demand. So
Arush is primarily a biodiversity conservation organization. How come you've got such a big food program? What's the connection?
Yeah, that's a really big question because it's such a big topic. I think, you know, on the sweeping statement, I guess globally, regionally, and locally, is that small scale farmer or diversified farming, like production farms, are places of higher biodiversity. There's greater variability of habitat in and around the farms, a variety of farming practices, and all of this leads to a greater diversity and abundance of the creatures. If I think about the smaller scale and think more locally, we have the delight at our center of working with the conservation science team, our colleagues. We're farmers, but we also like rub shoulders every day at lunch with the science team. And there are lots of studies just in our very specific center over time that sort of are looking a bit about at the biodiversity of our place. So there's a pollinator survey they did in 2017 and 2018, and it wasn't even comprehensive and looking at all of the possible pollinators around or all of the possible habitat around, or even the total like look at the whole season or multiple seasons. But there were just even like just in the bees, 7 species of native bumblebees, and then 7 species of sweat bees, and then the mason bees and leaf cutter bees and the honeybees. And that's just the bees, not the wasps and the moths and the flies. And I don't know about you, but I think I walk around sometimes not knowing what's around me, not even knowing what I'm seeing. And there's so much right in front of us. Yeah, the study looking at bees and pollinators was sort of a baseline to identify things and assess what was present. I don't think that we have something to compare to before, but we can kind of compare a little bit if we repeat it. And they had a number of sort of recommendations in different areas, like keep the logs here because they're nesting sites for this kind of bee, or always plant calendula this time in the spring. It was like posted the most number of pollinators in our study at that time, that kind of thing. So it's a bit of a baseline study.
Yeah, what comes to mind for me when talking about why are we farming and what does food have to do with biodiversity conservation is, I guess I think about the fact that everyone has to eat. We depend on agriculture in our society. And most people, most of us are eating, I guess I should say, in North America, are eating off of large-scale industrial agriculture. And the primary practices within those systems are monocropping and using pesticides in conventional systems and heavy machinery use, which is also destructive to the soil. And all of those practices are pretty destructive to biodiversity. And so I think about how we're kind of modeling an alternative and also just, I guess, being a part of the movement towards an alternative, which is, I think, quite crucial in biodiversity protection. And I think about on the farm, just, I mean, Abby's shared so many examples of kind of what's going on at our center, but on the farm, just with my hands in the dirt, I'm so often encountering different creatures. Like the other day we were moving tarps off of the soil and found a new snake. And often we're finding different like little voles with nests, and which I can't say are our favorites, but we still welcome them. They're adorable. And like earthworms in the soil, and not to mention like billions of microorganisms in the soil that are surviving because we're choosing to care for the soil in a different way. Birds all around, like the way we're farming, we're obviously putting out a diversity of crops, but we're also encouraging the presence of a diversity of species. And so I think that's pretty essential to contrast what is kind of the norm in agriculture and in the larger industrial scale.
I had the privilege of seeing the Kihamba agroforestry system on Mount Kilimanjaro when I was in university. I studied tropical agriculture and rural development, and I got to stay for 2 months up in the foothills of Mount Kilimanjaro. And the traditional home gardens there are a multi-layered agroforestry system with over 500 types of plants. They're incredibly rich in biodiversity. I barely knew what I was seeing at the time, and I'd love to go back to visit, but it continues to be this inspiration in my imagination of what small farms and diversified farming communities, how they influence the biodiversity of their places.
And we're quite a friendly audience, Rick and I. I'm wondering, Carly, have you had any experience of trying to explain this to less receptive ears or people who struggle to understand the kind of planet impacts of food? Or it's funny if you have any stories.
Yeah, that's a good question. I would say most of my experiences, people are quite receptive. It may just be the circles I run in, but I think there's a lot of both Christians and also kind of other folks that I encounter are kind of keen and curious about what I'm doing as a farmer. And so they may not understand the why of why are you farming at an environmental conservation organization, but as I explain it, they're usually like, wow, that's really cool. Like, I love what you're doing. I'm curious to know more. So I haven't had really, I'm having a hard time thinking of a person or a response of someone being really unreceptive. But it does often spark interesting conversation.
Abby, how did you first become interested and involved in this kind of thing? And like, is there something in particular? I mean, you've alluded to some of the seasonal part, but or not just alluded, you've mentioned some of the seasonal part, but what kind of gets you up in the morning? Hey, this is what kind of jazzes me up when I get to do fill in that and answer that question.
Yeah, I think this is in some ways a question that Carly and I get a lot as young female farmers. Like, why are you farming? How did this happen? I think I wasn't got interested in plants in high school as like a possible way to care for people because I was surrounded in an agricultural community. I'm from Southern Pennsylvania, a Mennonite with the, and there's lots of sort of small farms around, even though my family didn't have one. And I remember, so Mennonite Central Committee is a relief and development arm of the Mennonite Church. They are from my hometown, and I remember reading or hearing about a story of their work in Haiti with community reforestation efforts. And I was in high school, and I remember like putting a little sticky note on this little article for my dad. You're like, this is it. I want to do this. This is an amazing thing. Like, you can like plants and help people. And I think I went on to study in university then, sort of tropical agriculture and rural development, because I wanted, in my way, it was like a working interest in plants, kind of combining with the interest in feeding the poor. And I think my sort of understanding has evolved much more and become much more nuanced and contextual from sort of the black and white thinking I had at the time. Something that really gets me up in the morning is this, that there are lots of people who come through our farm that have very little experience with growing food or what it looks like to grow food or even garden. And they have these really just beautiful moments of seeing it and experience it in some way on the farm, and are quite transformed and like, wow, I've never picked a pea before. And they show up and we're harvesting peas that day.
Kind of continuing off of what Abby said that keeps me going and that is a favorite would be like looking out at the team that we have, which, like Abby mentions, can be quite large, and it's volunteers, it's interns, it's residents or apprentices, like lots of people, and watching just kind of the bond that forms. And it forms because they're working on like hard things and long, hot days, and you just kind of have that kind of strength of, okay, we're coming together to do this. But there's just this really like playful energy that I've seen in our farm team. And I hear them like making jokes and getting lost in deep conversation and just starting to geek out on farming and ask questions about kind of the technical and theoretical pieces of farming. I think that's always a highlight for me every year, is like when we get to that point in the season where there's such a deep bond between our team, and I get to see those like glimmers of just like pure joy and fun coming out of the team.
One thing I pick up on from both of you in your recent responses is how much of what you do, you're growing food and flowers. Okay, that's what you're doing. And yet so much of what you're doing is actually facilitating a kind of encounter for other people, or a kind of experience, whether that's the experience of like, okay, I get to taste carrots that are actually tasty. They're not just big and woody. Or it's the, wow, I had no idea that, you know, peppers grew on a bush, or that I had no idea zucchini could get this big, or whatever. Like they are touching and tasting and seeing sometimes for the first time, but at least in a new way. The work of growing food is not only about caring for the soil or the plants and so on. It's also about caring for people. Is there anything else you want to add? You've illustrated this a little bit already, but it seems to be such a big part of it.
Yeah, I think it is just like astonishing how much like, I think there's lots of studies about this, but just like having your hands in the soil and caring for the land connecting to the land is healing. And I think that that's really exemplified in a lot of the volunteers that we have on the farm. We've got like one volunteer has been coming for much longer than I've been here, maybe 10 years or something. And he had a pretty traumatic accident, and his occupational therapist was like, what do you want to do? And he's like, I think I want to learn how to grow food. And he's been coming ever since. And he told me so many stories about how, like, I mean, how it's improved his fine motor skills, but also how it's just like healed him. Like, he's excited and he's got this place that he gets to do work that is meaningful. And we've had other people come on like stress leaves from work where they're just like, can I just come and pick basil and like just work in the soil, do something that's tangible. And people that work in tech and they're like, I just need to be outside. And like one of our volunteers, his wife is like, oh my gosh, we have to send him to the farm on Saturdays. Like, he's so much better when he goes and works with you. So I've seen a lot of just like beauty in the way that our volunteers interact with the farm.
Anything you want to add, Abby?
Yeah, I think Carly and I both have lots of stories of people leaving feeling more hopeful and encouraged or energized or refreshed, which is really, which something that we just and really value that we get to be a part of a place that makes this experience possible and holds this space. You know, like we could be a production farm that isn't really open to having volunteers because it slows our pace down when we have other people on the farm. But we deliberately want that and want to maintain that.
We often finish this, well, we always finish our podcast by asking our guests to share some kind of practice or habit that they have that maintains a hopeful outlook on life, maintains hope as a practice. Would be interested to hear from both of you what hope looks like, practically speaking, in your lives. If there's anything you do that helps nurture that.
I've been really recently thinking about wanting to be more present to the specific work we're doing. I think when I get like into the theoretical and it can be like a sense of hopelessness of like, oh, well, I mean, the climate's warming. Who knows? Are we going to have like a heat dome or another flood or like what's the weather going to bring for us? Is the economy going to be able to support us? Like there's a lot of stuff that can cause hopelessness, but I don't know that this is like anything revolutionary, but I think when I find the moments to be able to be present to like what I'm doing and recognize, okay, this small thing is still important. I think that has been really helpful for me. So I mean, for like, I think it was last week, that looked like we were planting tomatoes and I was pretty lost in my mind and we're potting them up. So we grow them from small seedlings and then we put them into bigger pots and so they can be really extra cared for before they go out into the fields. And that is like my favorite thing that we do all year. It's just like, I don't know, there's something about it that's so wonderful. Tomatoes are my favorite thing to grow. And so I was lost in my mind. And then all of a sudden I just got like hit with this whiff of the smell of the tomato plant. Then I was like immediately locked back in and present to what was happening. And I was like, okay, this is what I've been trying to work on. So I think it's been that. It's been like trying to find these little moments throughout my work where I can be really present to the beauty of it and like that I love what I love about it, but then also reminded that okay, like I'm doing this small thing. I'm growing these tomatoes will not stop climate change, but I am engaging in the work of care for creation in a way that is transforming me and hopefully transforming the people around me. And I guess it's like regrounding into this like smaller place, not trying to take on the world.
Thanks. And Abby, how about you?
Yeah, I was also trying to think, I don't know if I have a daily practice. In some ways, I think about it as like being part of this seasonal thing for me. So growing things in the growing season is such a sort of a way to force myself to be hopeful. But it's pretty hard not to be in some ways when you're growing plants and watching and witnessing the cycle and tending to it from seed to harvest to preservation, compost, the whole thing. And then out of the growing season, I think I transition because our time shifts to like cooking and baking bread and eating and feasting together, even though it's dark. and those are sort of practices that help me sort of nurture hope.
Thank you both so much. And I've just found this a very hopeful and uplifting conversation. And I rarely am able to keep a plant alive, but it does make me want to go and try again. it's been a real pleasure to chat with you. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you both. It was delightful.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
For listening to the Field Notes podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave a review and subscribe.
And there's more information about this podcast and Arasha at arasha.org. So do join us next time.